Pick up a James Ellroy crime novel and you might come across a paragraph like this one from his newest, L.A. Confidential. Billy Dieterling on a white couch soaked red, a knife in his throat, two knives in his stomach, his scalp on the floor stuck to the carpet with an ice pick. A few feet away, a 40-ish white man, disemboweled, eviscerated, knives in his cheeks, two kitchen forks in his eyes, drug capsules soaking in floor blood. L.A. Confidential is Ellroy's ninth crime novel. Like the rest, it's set in Los Angeles and written in the same gritty, graphically violent style. His others include The Big Nowhere and The Black Dahlia. Like those two, L.A. Confidential explores police corruption and crime in Los Angeles during the 40s and 50s. You need rubber boots to wade through this Los Angeles. I asked him how he found his sense of L.A.
Well, essentially, I am from there. If I was from Moose Breath, Montana, I'd write long, dark, violent books about Moose Breath, Montana. I grew up there in the 1950s. I'm 42 now. I recall the 50s inchoately as a dark, violent place in constant ellipsis. Stuff was going on just underneath the surface. I wanted to know what. I wanted to know why.
What was going on in your life that made it such a dark place?
When I was 10 years old, my mother was murdered. Briefly, bluntly, a man picked her up in a bar, strangled her, did not rape her, dumped her body into the bushes outside Arroyo High School in El Monte. I went to live with my father, my parents were divorced, and started reading crime novels. Not so much for a tidy sense of resolution, but because I could touch the darkness and not be scathed. It gave me a sense of the genealogy of the victim and the victimizer, how dark events came to pass.
Was your mother's murder ever solved?
No.
I suppose other people have made a connection that, well, maybe this is one reason you've turned to crime writing. Is this a reason to try to resolve that crime?
It's a good, simple cause and effect. Parenthetically, a few months later, after my mother's death, I read of the unsolved murder of Elizabeth Short, the Black Dahlia, the subject of my book, The Black Dahlia, published in 1987.
The Black Dahlia was an actual case, a murder. A woman was cut in half, eviscerated, and it was notorious. I think it even still shows up in books like Hollywood Babylon as as one of the great horrid events of Hollywood. And you use this as a start for a novel.
Yes.
What was the reason for using an actual murder for a fictional story?
I was obsessed with the case for many, many years. It was all the horror of my mother's death. It was a much more explicit story. It was a story that encompassed all the great noir themes. Sex, obsession, betrayal, loss, corruption.
And drawing on your growing up in Los Angeles, you filled your books with this sort of very dark image of Los Angeles. What else went on in your youth growing up? After your mother was killed, did you find yourself out on the streets of Los Angeles yourself?
I went to live with my father, who was 50 years old at the time of my birth, 60-odd when I went to live with him after my mother's death, and I ran wild. As the years went on, I started drinking, using drugs, and breaking into places. I loved to be in other people's houses when no one was around. I was a prowler. Frankly put, I was a panty sniffer.
Did you ever get caught?
For burglary, no. Did a bunch of county jail time for various Mickey Mouse misdemeanors. Drunk, disturbing the peace, shoplifting, petty theft, all that kind of stuff.
What was it that convinced you that your experiences could go into making a good book?
It wasn't so much that. It was that I have loved crime fiction with a passion for many, many years. I have always wanted to write fiction. It wasn't until I was 30 years old that I put the two together, my passion for crime fiction, my desire to write. I always thought that I had the kind of brain that could not come up with complex, well-layered, dense plots, which great crime fiction requires. I outlined my first book, Brown's Requiem, late in 1978, and discovered, lo and behold, that I did have that kind of brain.
For many years, you were an alcoholic and have gone through treatment with Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah.
What did that change make for you as far as a writer, as far as your sense of confidence, as far as actually writing rather than fantasizing?
Well, I got sober 13 years ago, and essentially I had never written a word. Being sober gave me the confidence to actually start writing my first book. I wrote it in 1979. I've been sober about a year and a half, and I sold it.
You were working as a caddy at the time in Connecticut?
No, I was working as a caddy at the time in Los Angeles.
And how did you go about your writing? I mean, you caddy by day and write at night?
I would get up at 5 in the morning, go to Bel Air Country Club, cut a fast loop, which is what a caddy job is called, be home by 1, 2 o'clock, take a snooze, write until midnight.
So by day, you were consorting in clearly one of the most wealthy country clubs of the country.
Yeah, it was Fat City. Now I'm making big dough. I can afford to play golf there myself.
Who are some of the people you caddied for?
George C. Scott, let's see. Robert Goulet, what a baritone. Dinah Shore. Glenn Campbell. Telly Savalas. He poked a dead gopher on the 14th hole and said, "Who loves you, baby," to him. That was one of my biggest laughs as a caddy.
One of the things that struck me about reading The Black Dahlia, and I guess actually The Big Nowhere, the book that followed The Black Dahlia, and then L.A. Confidential, is that there's no real hero or good guy, as there tend to be in, say, a lot of detective fiction. I guess this is one of the characteristics of noir writing. But not only that, but instead of a detective or a hero continuing on through the books, you have a corrupt policeman sort of be the thread throughout these books.
Corrupt to varying degrees, yes. There is, in The Big Nowhere, an unholy triumvirate of three cops involved in the Red Scare. In L.A. Confidential, another unholy triumvirate. Paradoxically, in Black Dahlia, just a single first-person narrator. And I identify with all seven of the men I've just told you about. They're sympathetic to me, but I like to base my level of reader identification on shame, on guilt, on hidden sexual obsession. I don't want to go for cheap identification at all.
What would be cheap identification?
The standard, corny, first-person private eye hero who has very, very easy, convenient, and easily lampoonable hatreds. Yeah, he's been to Nam. He drinks too much. His basic character flaw is that he's too vulnerable. His wife left him because she couldn't take the dark, the probing, the truthful life he was leading. He hates big money. He hates mean-spiritedness, cruelty to animals, all the convenient targets. It's a snore. It's been a snore since Philip Marlowe.
Sometimes after the cops get in fistfights with one another, they always end up with loose teeth. Have you ever had loose teeth? And I wonder what that's like.
Yeah, I've had loose teeth and a broken nose, and it hurts, and it's no fun, and it nags at you, and nags at you, and nags at you. And you have to do something radical, like go to a dentist. Yeah, I've also hit people in the forehead before and popped my fingers. So every time I see it happen in a movie, it never strikes me as too realistic.
What would you like to see happen if somebody made a movie out of The Black Dahlia or L.A. Confidential or The Big Nowhere?
I'd like to see a 4.5-hour movie in black and white. I would like to have a soundtrack by Duke Ellington. I know he's dead, but since we're talking fantasy land here, you may as well bring him back to life to write the soundtrack. I would like a meticulously recreated L.A. in the past. I would like a cast comprised completely of unknowns, and I would like lots of sex and violence and nudity.
Have you been approached by the movies?
No.
How well do you fit into John Cheever country there in Connecticut?
I like John Cheever country. The people are well-behaved. They're civilized. All the despair is going on behind closed doors, unlike New York City here. And it gives me free rein to think about it.
When you were a young man, you described yourself as being a voyeur. Would you go around as a peeping Tom?
The first couple of summers after my mother died, 1958, 1959, I would walk the dog into Hancock Park and look in windows. Yeah, I was always insatiably curious about the way other people lived. I was convinced that other people had something that I didn't have. I felt very bereft at the level of my own circumstances. My father was elderly. I was an only child. My mother was a murder victim. I lived largely in a fantasy world. I wanted to integrate myself into a world where brothers and sisters were there, where sex, which I glimpsed, which I felt the tug of early on, was made explicit. I wanted to live in a more affluent world than the one I lived in. And walking my dog, Minna, the late beagle hound, around, looking in windows, fired my fantasy.
Do you feel now that the writing has supplanted that kind of voyeurism? You're able to now imagine these lives on the page?
I will always want to know why. I will always want to know the genealogy of dark, violent events. I'll never really be satisfied writing crime novels and striving to be, as I do, the greatest crime writer of all time. Gives me a sense of working toward the realizations. If, in fact, my wife asked me once, said, if you could not write these dark, deep, rich books of yours, what would you want to do? And I told her that I would like to go back to the focus of my darkest curiosities, Los Angeles, circa 1938 to 1959, and just be a bug on the wall or a free-floating spirit and experience all the things that I write about. Just see it. See it unfold.
Thank you, James Ellroy.
My pleasure.
James Ellroy's new novel, L.A. Confidential, is published by Mysterious Press.